We are quickly approaching the end of 2024. And if you have not purchased an investment property yet this year, and it's been one of your goals, I need you to listen very closely. I know many of you live in areas where it's so expensive and investment properties seem impossible. I'm talking about some of the big cities. So LA, New York City, maybe even Seattle, Atlanta, places in Florida, and the list goes on. If you know that where you live is too expensive, I need you to lock in right now. Investing out of state changed my life as somebody living in California. I now invest in Ohio and I'm growing my portfolio. It's something that's possible. You just need the right information and execution. So if that's you, if you want to learn how to invest out of state, go to outofstatemoney.com and there is a free training that'll outline the steps for you and help you understand exactly what it takes. So go to outofstatemoney.com or simply go to the link in the description of this episode.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue. This is episode 16. The purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming Black real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors. Shout out to our show sponsors, Mint Inc. Mint stands for the Minority Interdisciplinary Networking Team. Mint empowers young minority professionals with an interdisciplinary network for learning, collaboration, and the development of entrepreneurial ventures. You can become a member of their network for free at mintinc-usa.com. You can also follow them on IG at mintinc_USA. As you all know, there was no episode last week. It was a very hard day and week for the world. And with the passing of Kobe Bryant, yeah, I just wasn't in a headspace to record. So thank you all for your support and for your patience and continuing to support our page and support what it is we're trying to do. And I'd like to dedicate this episode to Kobe Bryant, his daughter, Gigi, and all of the other victims of this accident and this horrific event. Also, my grandmother passed away a couple of days ago on January 31st. So I would also like to dedicate this episode to her. The Kobe Bryant death was really difficult for me. Growing up, I played basketball through high school, and I became interested in playing basketball really because of Kobe. And, you know, I've been a Laker fan since I was 8, 9 years old. And, you know, just growing up in Brooklyn, growing up in the city, Kobe Bryant was a role model for us, for all of us. Just an example of someone who was dedicated to his work. And, you know, there's a lot of things that he did that can be applied to life in general. And so it's been a hard week for everybody. It's been a hard week for me. Had an opportunity to go to Staples Center this weekend and join with other fans in mourning and celebrating his life. So, you know, let's just continue to have that Mamba mentality, approach everything we do with the maximum effort, make the sacrifices needed to reach our goals, and just keep supporting one another. As this is hard for everyone, whether you're an athlete or not, whether you like sports or not, you're impacted by this tragedy. It's something hard to see. And also for my grandmother, you know, it's hard to see her go. You know, it's just tough. But you know, I appreciate all the support that I've received from everyone. So I'm very excited about this episode. A couple quick hits and quick announcements. You can now purchase our merch at gum.co/bread. You've been getting a lot of people purchasing our merch and representing the brand. So it's much appreciated. You can definitely appreciate all of the support. We're also on Twitter. You can follow us at Bread Podcast, at B-R-E-D Podcast. Take a moment, follow us there. We tweet throughout the day and keep you all updated, and definitely love for you to join the conversation there. Also, sign up for our email list. The link is in our bio. You can sign up for our email list and get our newsletter, which will be taking off soon and getting sent out with additional resources, content, discounts, so on and so forth. So we'll have one quick special announcement, and then we'll get into our episode.
Join us for the Black Men Building Wealth Virtual Conference, February 29th, 2020. from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. featuring Charles Oglesby, Andre Hatchett, Jillian Gordon, Brian Robinson, Brandon Thomas, Oge Madu, Gene Holloman, Lamon Woods, Jay Morrison, Torrance Reed, Byron Sellers, Henry Washington, Brian Thomas, Xavier Miller, Chris Senegal, Jeremy Johnson, and more. Topics covered will include marriage, personal finance, debt paydown strategies, tech and investing, mobile home real estate investing, tax strategies, and more. All proceeds will be donated to the Bless a Black Man Foundation. It's the Black Man Building Wealth Virtual Conference. It's lit.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Here with me, I have Mark Jones II, who's a student at UCLA studying for his MBA. And he's also a homeowner in LA who's living rent-free. No, it sounds impossible. We'll definitely talk more about how he's gotten that done and how you can too. So Mark, appreciate you coming on, man.
Man, thank you for the invite, man. I'm happy to be here.
Definitely. So first, tell us about what your childhood was like and what you saw or what you didn't see that shaped your view of building wealth.
That's a wise question, man. Starting from the root, starting from the beginning. I would say growing up in LA, I grew up in an area, a neighborhood called Faircrest Heights. It's like near the Grove. It's one of the top revenue grossing malls in the United States. It's near the Wilshire, LACMA. It's just near Beverly Hills, a nice area to grow up in. And it was a majority Black neighborhood. But what I saw in riding my bike a mile west or going up to Santa Monica, going up to the Palisades, I just saw like development. I saw wealth. I saw Rolls Royces. I saw Bentleys. I was always like a precocious child, paid attention, read a lot. And my dad used to expose me to a lot of information, a lot about real estate. But I would say the most pivotal thing, just to keep it short and sweet, beyond all the reading, beyond the seeing things visually, our house went up in value during that crazy climb before the real estate bubble popped. We bought it in 97 when I was 7 years old, Faircrest Heights, for like $197,000. And it went up in 2008, in the 10-year period, 2007, to over $1.2, $1.5 million. And so I'm always, like I said, I'm always paying attention. I'm talking to my dad about it. They're talking about how they're like borrowing money from the equity and we're going shopping, we're having fun. But just how you said, whoa, I'm like, wait a minute. You're telling me in 10 years, what MD can save that much? What lawyer? You know what I mean? There are MDs, there are lawyers. But as a kid, I'm like, we didn't even do anything. Like, we painted a couple times. Like, I've been having Christmas every year out here, riding my bike, catching the bus on Pico. Like, what's changed? Like, why has it gone up this much? So that's when it sparked in my mind, like, yo, real estate is where it's at. Like, if I could own more real estate in L.A., it would change the game. It would change my life. Like, that's wealth. Like, $1 million. That's insane. So that was the most pivotal thing. There was a lot of other things. Like I said, I met, I could talk to anybody as well. So if I see somebody that's doing well, ever since I was a kid, I'll ask them, what do you do for a living? They're just looking at me like, what the hell? I'm like, you look happier than everybody else. Like, let me ask you, what's the secret? So besides all that, it was that 10-year run that blew my mind, man. That blew my mind.
Wow. And tell us more about those conversations, what you can remember from those conversations, just going out to people who seemed like they were doing well.
Like, so this is the thing, man. Like, you know, there's no mysteries in life. You reap what you sow. The thoughts and the actions that you take and that you do, they lead to results, right? And they bear fruit. So I would see people like, and I didn't even know what the cars were, but they'd be like Aston Martins and different things like that in West Hollywood, Beverly Hills. And I would just, I would take off with my mom and go to like cafes by the Beverly Center. And people would be just chilling during the week. And I'm like, mom, one day I promise I want to be like them. And I would ask them, what do you guys do? So I would talk to young white guys and they would be like, oh, I'm a movie producer. Most people work in Hollywood because it's LA. Mm-hmm. Or I'm in real estate. I'm real estate development. And you just have conversations. Like I met the, who was the guy who owned the Clippers? And he was like racist. Donald Sterling. So he owns a lot of real estate out here in LA. I've met him and mm-hmm. I had a conversation with him as well. And it's a mixture of being in LA because there's like stars, like mm-hmm. we have a large number of billionaires. So these conversations, man, it's simple things like, you know, invest your money. You don't have to spend as much money on like weddings. That $20,000 could be invested in real estate. It could be invested in stock, invest in a business. But I met Donald Sterling and I just walked up to him at the Grove and started talking to him. And he's like taken aback because it's like, who's this young black guy? And I have a button down on now, but I'm usually like with my hat back and just chilling, like being myself. But I'm talking to him and he's like, you know, well, real estate is no different from any other business. You have to just, you know, work hard, build wealth and reinvest in yourself, be disciplined. Same with Rick Caruso. He's a big developer, billionaire. He'll be walking around at the Grove just chilling. A real friendly guy. And you could talk to these people. And what I learned is like, people hear about like the wealth is amassed. Most of wealth in America is amassed through real estate. But I love what you're doing, brother, because it's like, it's disconnected from the average person, the path to how to build the wealth. It's we hear that, oh man, you get rich in real estate. But it's like, well, how? And studying, what I did was study these conversations I have with these people. I will go back and study their story. So Donald Sterling, Rick Caruso, they started off in duplexes in their early 20s, mm-hmm. their mid to early 20s. They didn't start off with wealth. They didn't start off with, you know, Donald Sterling changed his name. He was a Jewish guy. Or he is a Jewish guy. Excuse me. He had a Jewish name and he changed his name to Sterling to fit in at that time because more Jews had like discrimination. Rick Caruso was a lawyer. He went to Pepperdine. But still, it's not like he came like Donald Trump with massive wealth. He had to build it. So that was kind of like a long answer, but those are some of the conversations, man.
Wow. So a couple of things stand out. One is exposure. You know, you had a lot of exposure to things as a kid. So you were even just being able to look around and see wealth or see that someone could amass, you know, fortune or have this car or live in this area or just be in a cafe in the middle of the week. Living their best life. You were able to kind of see that and aspire to achieve that one day. And then second, you were bold enough at a young age to inquire and to ask these people, how did you get to what you're doing and how? And then not only that, like you said, you went back, you read their stories. I think that's very important. And also like the fact that you mentioned, sometimes it can feel like that's so far beyond reach. And so it's great that now we can talk about it and share with people who can understand where we're coming from on like the average person level. So that's exactly. Awesome. Great. So from there, how did you end up getting into real estate? How did you end up deciding that, you know what, I want to purchase something?
So it's funny, man, because in life, if you don't act on, ideas is basically like an architect with a blueprint that never gets a builder, never gets a developer. It just dies. It just sleeps in his plans and his blueprint plans. So growing up, my dad owned property out here in LA as well. I didn't go over that. That's another story. But I always just assumed like, oh, I'm going to invest in an apartment building. I'm just going to own real estate. That was just like in my head. And it was passive. I love passive income. It seemed like a brilliant idea to me, right? But it wasn't until I got my first job after I graduated from Howard University, and it was like a big orientation, or not orientation, but it was like a company meeting where everybody met like quarterly. And I was a new guy, young dietitian. And this older lady walked into me and said, "Are you married?" And I was like, she looks kind of old to be asking me if I'm married. But I'm like, all right, let me just see what she's talking about. So I'm like, nah, I'm not married. And she's like, she was like, "Oh, okay. You should buy a house." And I'm like, "All right." But she was like, "You should buy a house and you should rent out the rooms, or you should buy a multi-unit, like a duplex, something like that, and rent out the units. And then you could live in it. They could pay off the mortgage, and then you could sell it when it goes up in value." And I'm like, "Oh, that's like that." I mean, I have basic reasoning skills, so I'm like, "That makes sense. Like, that's smart." And she was like, my nephew just did it. He was in medical school or law school or something like that, in Baltimore, like somewhere in Maryland. And it went up like 50,000, and he was able to sell it, like, for, you know, and he reaped 50,000, and then he started his practice, or, you know, went to residency. So that was the first seed in my mind. But again, we need like spurs, or we need like to have a burning desire to push us along to take action. So it was like a year before I took action. But the reason I took action was because one, my dad was also telling me I should get a house. But two, I wasn't saving any money. I was working. I went to college. I followed all the rules. And I like to look at my budget at the end of the month, and I could barely save anything. And I'm like, what's my highest expense? I was paying $900 in rent at the time. I wasn't in LA. I was living in a suburb outside of LA for a one-bedroom apartment. I'm like, man, if I could live rent-free, if I could get rid of this $900, I'd be straight. I could save my money. And then it all started clicking. I'm like, man, they've been telling me this. I've been hearing about the real estate. And then that's when I started making the steps towards it. And I bought my first, so I didn't say it, but I bought my first single family, and I rented out the rooms like the doctor told me, the older woman I was working with told me.
Wow, that's awesome, man. So walk us through that. Walk us through that first purchase.
So I'll say this, man, I'm kind of philosophical, and I deal with a little bit of mindset stuff too. Mm-hmm. And the first thing was belief. The first thing was belief, bro, because I didn't believe that I could own. I wish I could show you how like my spot is renovated in here. I didn't believe I could own a multi-unit in Los Angeles, like rent-free, renovated, nice. I didn't believe it at first until I met people who had achieved it. So the first step was actually just believing it. Like I can make money hand over fist, live in the master bedroom, and just have roommates, and just have cash flowing in. That was the first like belief, because I'm just like, yo, that's crazy. It just was hard to conceptualize. But so I got over that, and I started spending time in Barnes and Nobles and not buying. I used to do this as a kid, so I revisited this practice, and I started reading books for free while I was chilling in Barnes and Nobles, and then going home and coming back and reading them. And I just learned basically about the FHA program. And I used the FHA program to do 3.5% down. And I followed some teachings by Jay Morrison. He still has a video on YouTube called How to Get, I think, a Perfect Credit Score or something like that. And he gives all the game for free. Ever since I watched that video, my credit score has never gone below 700. And that was like years and years ago. I just followed what he said in the video. So my credit score up. You don't even need a 700 credit score for FHA. I think you need like 580 or something like that. You don't even need, I think 640 is like, they won't charge you extra, you know, fees and stuff or higher interest. But I think 580 is like the minimum. But I originally wanted a duplex or a triplex, but I didn't go with the duplex or triplex because of the area I was living in. It wasn't that many. It's an area called Lancaster Palmdale. It's not that many duplexes or triplexes in the nicer areas. So I found like a killer real estate agent. I started going shopping. I got pre-qualified. I started going shopping and put in a couple of offers, and I found the house that I wanted, and I made the move. I do want to share something about getting qualified though, like a story or some information, if I may.
Please do.
Yeah. So like something that this concept that I have is like reverse engineering your goals. So once I set my mind and knowing that I want to get a multi-unit, or I want to get a house. It's called a house hack, where you live in one room or multi-unit and rent out the other units. I wasn't actually qualified yet, but I basically had the house in my clutches because my mind was determined. I had the success mindset. So it was just a matter of time before reality caught up, right? So what I used to do is I would put on a tie and a button down. I would go into the bank. And I would meet with the mortgage banker, because if you go into the bank, a lot of people don't know that mortgage lenders work for you. The whole purpose of them coming into, working in the community is to close more loans for the bank. So if you walk in and tell them, I have this goal of using FHA to purchase a house, or I want to buy a duplex, triplex, fourplex, multi-unit, I want to pay as little down as possible, they'll tell you what you need. They'll say you need your W-2s, pay stubs, credit report, all that. And then they'll reverse engineer it. They may tell you you don't qualify, right? You don't qualify for anything, or this is the least amount you qualify, and you may want more. But tell them, hey, Johnny or Sam or Mark, whatever the mortgage lender, or Sue or Jill, whatever her name is, say, hey, let's reverse engineer this. What would I have to do to qualify? And he said, okay, you got to get your credit score a little bit higher. I need you to see you worked for a year, or I need you, you can't go commission, you got to go FHA, or you can't do this, you got to do that. And they'll break it down to you. And what you could do is set smaller goals to knock off everything on the list. So I set the smaller goal of getting my credit score up, then getting the down payment saved up, then, you know, moving to this, moving to that, until I got to the point where I was fully qualified. So I just want to tell people that there's no dream that's unattainable. If you could reverse engineer it, then you could just walk back up to the mountain, walk back up to the dream, and then just high five it.
I love it. So. I love it, man. Awesome. How many years ago was that first purchase?
That was, dang, man, we're in 2020. So that's crazy. It was in 2015. Uh-huh. But I started in the dream like in 2013, but I had a girlfriend at the time that didn't, I wanted to get her on board, but she didn't see the concept, she didn't understand it. And I want to say that too. Don't let anybody deter you from your dreams, man or woman. Because yeah, she, cause I'm from a nice part of LA. Mm-hmm. Really, it's like dope. So I was showing her where I was from. Mm-hmm. and we used to spend a lot of time, go to restaurants and stuff. And she would say like, no, I want to live in this nice apartment. We're going to rent in this part. And I'm like, mm-hmm. No, babe, like, let's cop the duplex, cop the triplex. We can come strong to the neighborhood later with the passive income. Mm-hmm. And I got caught up in her story of belief, and it deterred me for like a year and a half, 2 years. So it's 2015, mm-hmm. man. I did it in 2015, September 2015, when I was 25 years old.
Wow. That's incredible, man. And at that time, around how much did it cost at that time?
So at that time, that if you recall, the value started climbing from 2011 mm-hmm. up to like 2013. So they're still lower. Mm-hmm. It was $170,000 mm-hmm. With a 3.5% down payment. So that would equate to about $6,000, somewhere around $6,000 for the down payment. Mm-hmm. I will say this, though, that I don't know exactly how it works with the books, but there's a book that I read that's called Nothing Down. In the 2000s.
Oh, that's dope.
By Robert Allen. So Robert G. Allen. So I actually read this book because one of the goals was, one of my hurdles was the down payment, six racks. And I didn't know how I was going to save up six racks. Now I'm a better saver, but I was like, I can use my intelligence. I can figure out another way to do this. I'm not going to say exactly how I did it. But he gives a lot of different strategies. I'll say check out the book.
Okay.
Because there's some ways that are in the gray area. And if you talk to like mortgage lenders, they'll say, well, you know, if I don't see this, then we'll let it slide. Or there's ways of getting like gifts from your grandmother or gifts from your sister or gifts from a family member. And you could pay it back to your family member, but technically you're not supposed to. It's supposed to be a gift. So there's different ways of getting the down payment. But this book is like a good 180, 200 pages, and it helped me get the down payment, man. Yeah, helped me get the down payment.
Cool, cool. So from there, did you end up renting the rooms out as the woman recommended initially?
Yeah, it's crazy, man. Before I jump to the rooms, I want to drop one gem really quickly. With the down payment, that wasn't just the only thing. There's also something called closing costs, which are also about 3%.
Got it.
By reading these different books that the brothers recommended, Sam's recommended on this podcast, and reading this book as well, I learned about negotiation in real estate deals. And I negotiated the other 3%, which was another $6,000. So I didn't have to pay for that. In total, I had to come to the table $12,000. Remember, I didn't have a dime. I had a couple of, you know, I probably had like a rack or something, but I used the book to get the $6,000. And I told my real estate agent, we're going to negotiate for the other $3,000. Other 3%, which is $6,000, because I do something. I always ask the agent to ask them, what's their motivation for selling? Because if they're highly motivated, I read about in the books when I was in Barnes & Nobles, they're more willing to negotiate. They had a sick child and they wanted to move into a bigger house. She had like a leukemia or cancer or something like that. Wow. And they were very motivated to move. So I said, okay, boom. Real estate agents will tell you, they'll never tell you why they're selling, but they will. They're just regular people, just like you and me. They'll tell you, unless they're business people, then they won't say anything. But usually just a regular person, they'll tell you. So I got that $6,000, I was able to close. But to answer your question, I rented out the rooms. And I could tell a horror story about one of my tenants that it was a mistake that you guys can learn from and avoid. Yeah.
Yeah, tell us about it.
But yeah. So my very first one was a young brother. Mm-hmm. And he was phenomenal. He was great. And he actually used to see my library, and he left the house and bought his own house hack because we used to chop it up. Nice. And he was like, man, I'm trying to be like you. And I was like, what wow. you mean, man? Like, you know, I'm just chilling. He said, because I told him, yeah, I can use the house. You can do whatever. Just don't touch my books. Yeah. That's gold for me. Do not touch my books. But it used to be glass and he could see the titles. So he didn't touch it, but he used to read the titles. And he said, man, what's the deal with you? So he ended up getting a 5-bedroom house, living in one and renting out the rooms. That was wow. the first tenant. He was dope. But the second tenant, I made a mistake. What I like to do is vet them heavily up front. So that means talk to their boss at the job, do a criminal background check, do a credit score, make sure have a calculation and ratio for how much they make compared to how much the rent is. Mm-hmm. So because it was renting rooms and it was low cost, I said I think it was like 2.3 times as much as the rent in the room would cost. But in general, if you rent out a whole unit, it probably won't be exactly like that. It may be 1.5 or, you know, something like that. But you just have to have a number. And I would talk to the previous landlord and ask mm-hmm. about how, like, what kind of tenant they were. Mm-hmm. So I had this white girl, and she's great. I mean, she's awesome as a human being. But she was a horrible roommate. And she was coming from Buffalo, New York. And she was an engineer, because I worked near Air Force Base, where there's a lot of engineers. So she was an engineer. So I'm thinking, okay, she's a smart girl, engineer. She just finished school. She just got the job, was making more money than me. So I was thinking, okay, she should be responsible. But I couldn't get in contact with any past landlords. And so I made the exception mm-hmm. and let her slide in without verifying with previous landlords what kind of a tenant she was. Mm-hmm. And she was a horrible roommate. She was filthy. We was all guys except for her. She was the yeah. only girl. She was alcoholic. She was, you can be free, have sex. It's all good. But she always had guys running in and out. And her room was next to mine. She was always having sex. And it was horrible, man. The other guys complained about her. She always paid her rent on time. But when you're doing a house hack like that and you're living with them, you have to do, they'll basically manage themselves if you get really good tenants.
Yeah.
And you vet them up front. You make it extremely difficult for them to get in up front. Another thing is sometimes meet them out at their car and check out their car and see if it's filthy mm-hmm. or in the inside of it's clean. And it'll pay off in the long run, man. It'll pay off in the long run.
Wow. So how'd you get her out?
You know what, man? I think we suffered a little bit. We talked to her about cleaning up. She got better with cleaning. Mm-hmm. She didn't stop sleeping with the guys, and I just tried to tell her to keep the noise down a little bit. I think eventually she just got another job, man. And then I end up getting more new tenants, man. But it's just a lesson learned, man.
Yeah.
But the thing in real estate about people being afraid of it and stuff of the downsides is like, I'm building all this wealth. I'm living rent free. And I'm learning a minor lesson that's just going to make life better in the future.
Absolutely.
So I'd rather learn that lesson than just be broke in the same cycle, not learning anything, good yeah. or bad. I'm just renting out a spot or I'm hustling backwards. I'm not making money. So it wasn't a nightmare, man. She was a tough roommate.
Absolutely. And how many bedrooms was that house?
So this one was only a 3-bedroom, 2-bath. I was in the master and I had two roommates. And to give you some numbers, I know we talked about numbers a little bit. I think it was like 12 or 13. No, it was like 1176 or something like that, the PITI. So that's mm-hmm. the principal, the interest, taxes, and insurance. And I think I got 500 50 from one room, and I think 550 or like 600 from another room. So it just like right covered the mortgage. Wow. And then I had them split up the utilities.
Gotcha.
So we just three ways to split up the utilities. And so I was stacking up, man, and the dream came true, man. And it was an incredible learning experience, man.
That's crazy. So here you are back then at the age of 25, living rent free, just paying some utilities, which is mm-hmm. just incredible. Where did you go from there?
So what did I do from there, man? I kind of hit a tough spot at work. I was working as a dietitian, and I got underneath the supervisor boss that I didn't gel well with. Mm-hmm. And I was in a bind. I'm from LA, but I was living on Palmdale. It's a high desert Lancaster area. And mm-hmm. I went to get back home to LA. So I ended up quitting the job, but because I had the real estate going and I was living rent free, I was able to quit the job and work like three part-time gigs as a dietitian, and I started looking for properties looking for jobs out in LA. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to move to LA and grow at home, right? And so I ended up finding a job in LA, and I was living with family while I was renting out the master bedroom. So I was actually cash flowing.
Nice.
I started cash flowing when I rented out the master bedroom. So I'm cash flowing, and I was thinking about renting, going to get a spot, but somebody dropped a seed in my mind of house hacking in LA. I'm like, no way, that's not possible. Like, how could, with these prices, like, how could it be possible? And the FHA has certain rules where the rent has to pay, 75% of the mortgage, and it's like all these different rules. And I'm like crushing the numbers, and I'm like, this can't work. Like, I just, it can't work. And one of our favorite authors, Robert Kiyosaki, he says, don't ask, don't say I can't afford it. Ask how can I afford it.
One of my favorite quotes.
Yeah, that's his quote. So I'm like, man, like, kind of feeling bad. I'm seeing my property go up in value. It's climbing up in value. But I'm just still like thinking like, okay, I can get it. I can get an apartment. I'm going to stay with family. But like, when I say apartment to rent, how am I going to do this? So I got a HELOC on my, that's a home equity line of credit on my property, because it went up in value. I think like maybe 50 or 60,000. It went up. So my initial idea was, go ahead.
Can you explain to our listeners who may not know what a home equity line of credit is?
Okay, yeah. So so thanks for that. I'm sorry.
No, you're good. You're good, man.
Yeah, so basically when you purchase a property, equity is like the difference between the value in the home and what you owe on it. So remember when I said I bought it at 170? It was actually 172 exactly, but let's say 170. And the tenants every month are paying down the mortgage that I owe little by little. So automatically you're gaining equity by the debt pay down. So let's say they pay $1,000 towards the principal debt balance a month. In a year's time, that's $12,000 less. If I pay 172, now it's at 160. My equity is 12,000, right?
Got it.
But the beauty in real estate is that it appreciates over time because there's an increased population and increased demand, but limited supply in houses, right? Especially in California, people love coming here. So the value of the property goes up, it appreciates, and say it goes up, I think it went up to like 220, so that's like 50,000. And a home equity line of credit is, it's basically a line of credit based on that value in between what you owe and what the property has been appraised for. Most banks, credit unions are more, I guess you could say, user friendly or customer friendly. They'll give you more money, but most banks give you like a LTV, loan to value ratio, of like 70%. Loan to value ratio just means, it's all these different words you have to look up, right? But loan to value ratio means if the loan, okay, so let's see, how will I say it simply? If the value of the house is 200,000 and the loan to value ratio is 70%, you're only going to get 70% of that 200,000.
Got it. Got it.
Right? But in reality, it's not even that. What it is if it's if you owe 160 and the value is 200, it's 70% of the $40,000 difference. $200 minus 160.
That makes sense.
So what I did was, I got the 70% difference, or I got the 70% of the difference in the equity value. So I got like 70% of the $50,000 that was in the property. And what that does is now you have checks, or you can go into the bank and say, I need $20,000. Or you can have checks, write a check for $10,000, $15,000. A lot of people just do home improvement, they pay off old debts, they pay for college, whatever, buy a car. But I'm from LA, so my father taught me, if you're gonna get debt, it has to make you money. Yeah. You see what I'm saying? So we don't just take out debt and go buy cars and liabilities. That's called hustling backwards where I'm from. So we don't get down like that. You take the money and you invest in something that's going to give you money back. So I said all that to say I got the HELOC because I was thinking about buying another single family out in that high desert area. Mm-hmm. But fate changed my life because I was on the phone with a mortgage broker, his assistant actually, a young lady. Man, I love her. She's still my friend to this day. And I was on the phone with her, and I'm like, man, I had this dream of buying a four unit in LA, but I know it's impossible, and you know the numbers and all these rules, FHA, blah blah. So I just want to get two properties with this this home equity line of credit that I have, and some money that I had saved up. And she's like, well, I mean, that's cool. We can help you get the two properties and rent out, because I was going to rent out the rooms again. I was going to rent out all the rooms to like engineers. And she was like, that's cool, but it is possible. I own a four unit. I own two actually in LA. And I'm like, what? And I'm like, yo, wait a minute. I said, I'm like, no, I'm sorry. I thought I heard you say you own two four units in LA. I'm tripping. She's like, no, you're not tripping. That's what I said. I'm like, you sound young as hell. How old are you? She's 28 years old. So just how your eyes are getting big like that. I'm like, yo. So she's a little bit older than me, but now she owns, her name is Lauren. I'm not going to say her last name, but yeah. Name is Lauren. Now she owns, two four units, the same two four units. Mm-hmm. But she's building, she got into real estate development. She's building a six unit in South LA. And it's basically done. But she sparked the belief in my mind that I could get the four unit. And she told me which areas to look in. And that sparked my whole train. And eventually I was able to get the four unit, man. Or it's actually a triplex. Got the triplex. And that's a whole journey and story we can get into. But I'm just trying to explain the steps that got up to it, man.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When did you purchase the triplex? How recent was that?
That was recent, man. That was May 2019, man.
Oh, wow. It's not even a year. That's amazing.
It hasn't even been a year.
Wow. So talk to us about that. Talk to us about, so you spoke to Lauren, you figured out it's possible.
It's possible.
And so from there, you know, talk us through what that was like, what that process was like and purchasing and all that stuff.
It was crazy, man, because it was a journey, man. I learned a lot, cried along the way. It was tough, man. But I want to say this first. Belief, desire and belief. Because when I tell my story, people's story may not be exactly like my story. That doesn't mean that it's not possible for you.
Yeah.
So I want to tell my story. And people say, well, he did this. And well, he bought his first property. So he was able to get in LA. Look, you know the story that I told myself? Even after Lauren told me she was married. So I said, it's because they have two incomes. It's because they're married. And she got the down payment gifted from her family. It's because of the family. If you believe that it's possible, you'll figure out a way. So I just want to say that first. So to tell my story, I realized, okay, scratch buying the other properties. Let's figure out a way to get the multi-unit. So my property started climbing more in value. It went up in value a little bit. I think in total went up like 85, almost 100,000 in 2 years.
Wow.
They went up 100,000. So remember when I said our property went up like a million out in LA, but ours was like in a nicer area. This one in 2 years, 50,000 each year went up. And it didn't go up like each year. It was in 1 year it went up the most. So I decided that I was going to sell that property and cash out and buy the multi-unit, right? So what I did was I checked out FHA, checked out, you know, different programs, but I discovered the NACA program, which my homegirl Gabby, who was episode 13,
yeah,
previous guest. Yeah, she's out here in LA too. We went to Howard together.
Small world, yeah, man. That's crazy.
We went to Howard together, and we're in the same real estate meetup group out here in LA.
Nice.
And so I touched bases with her, and she inspired me too because I ran into her. I'm like, you look familiar. Like, you went to Howard, yeah. So we start talking, and I was like, I'm trying to get a multi-unit in LA, but it's like super difficult. I'm going through the NACA program. She's like, I went through the NACA program, so I'm like, oh, stats. So it's inspiration. Yep. So I learned about the NACA program. Bro, the NACA program pays for renovations. They allow for your down payment to be gifted. They're real lenient with the credit scores. You don't have to have like a really high credit score. You can buy down the interest rate. What does that mean? Interest rate determines the monthly payment on the loan. Mm-hmm. If you have a car that you purchase and you finance, and the interest rate is like 18%, you're going to pay buku money. It's going to be like almost like a mortgage, or you're paying rent on that monthly payment. But you can get it down to like 0.25% or 0.5%. My mortgage right now is at 2%, which is like incredible. I think the rates now are like 3.25 or 3.75 or something like that. But with NACA, you can buy it down. And buying it down means paying a certain percentage. Like, you pay 1% of the total cost of the property. And that's the cost of buying it down, 0.25%. So if the property is $100,000, 1% would be $1,000. And that would buy down the interest rate from, for example, 3.75 to 3.50. It sounds kind of tricky, but you can get the basics and then research it. It's very significant because it makes your monthly mortgage payment lower, and it lasts for 30 years.
Wow.
So as the stadium is popping up, I'm right here by Inglewood.
Right.
As gentrification is happening and all that, as I'm raising the rent every month on my tenants, my mortgage is staying the same, nice and low, nice and smooth, rent-free, cash flowing. You know what I mean? That's how it's supposed to be. They pay for renovations and rehab. They pay for down payment. I decided to go with NACA. I went through the NACA journey. I don't know how I didn't listen to Gabby's episode, to be honest. I'm very busy. I'm at UCLA and everything.
Yeah.
But NACA is a journey, bro.
How long
NACA
was the process?
I heard that
it can be pretty arduous. How long did it take you to get from the beginning to the end of the NACA program?
Man. I would say I never ran a marathon before, but I ran a marathon with the NACA program. I would say, man, my situation was unique. Everybody who goes to the NACA program, they always say every situation is unique because it's true. It is. When I used to hear that, just tell me how long it took you, man. Like, don't be talking about other unique stuff. But it took me, to be 100%, 1,000% honest, it took me like a year and a half. Mm-hmm. But in all reality, once I was like ready and all my stuff was lined up, it took closer to like 7 months.
Okay.
It took closer to like 7 months. The reason I say that is because I had to, you can't own a property and go through NACA at the same time.
Right.
So I spent time renovating my single family. Just minor stuff like fixing up the cabinets in the kitchen and the bathroom. Mm-hmm. You get your most bang for your buck in the kitchen and the bathroom. So if you're ever going to spend any money, you put some lipstick on her, you paint the walls, and you fix up the cabinets in the kitchen and in the bathroom, and if you can, the countertops. Mm-hmm. They're real simple. So that took a lot of time. Then I had to sell it. Mm-hmm. I went through escrow a couple times with some phony buyers on the first property, so that took some months. Mm-hmm. And then you have to prove that you can save up a certain amount of money to NACA to be able to make the payments on the mortgage for a couple of months, for like three to six months. And then LA market was competitive as hell, man. It was Chinese buyers, cash buyers, offering $200,000 more than the four units were worth, $100,000 more than the four units were worth. So I was ready by November, December, and I closed in May. So it's like a seven month process once I had everything lined up. But in truth, it was like a year and a half. But it was because of my other house.
Got it. How many offers did you end up putting in? Like, if you just about, if you remember,
I do. I recorded it, actually. Oh, wow. I counted. So I actually got my real estate license. I took some classes at UCLA Extension before I applied to, just to get a taste of the real estate stuff to see if I really want to get my MBA. Mm. And I got my real estate license along the way. And I was writing my own offers at first. Mm-hmm. But it was stressful as hell. So I ended up getting an agent. Mm-hmm. But I'll say this, I recorded. I looked at over 100 properties, analyzed over 100 properties. Like when I say over 100, I mean like 105, 103, just over 100. Mm-hmm. And I put in offers on 26 properties.
Wow.
And I went into escrow three times.
Wow.
Before I got the deal. And this is something that I want to tell other people, and that I told myself. I asked myself after everything was happening, everything, it all went down. I said, if you told yourself a year and a half ago or a year ago that it would take all this, but you would get that 2% interest, you'll be walking distance, jogging distance to the Forum, to the new stadium. You'd be living rent free. You got stainless steel appliances. You renovated property. Would you do it? Would you hang in there? I said, yeah, I would do it, man. If I came from the future and told myself, I would stick it out. Yeah. So you can stick it out. It's going to be worth it because guess what? Earl Nightingale says this. Never give up on a dream for how long it's going to take because the time is going to pass anyway.
Yeah.
A year and a half is going to pass anyway. Yeah. Why not be rent-free, wealthed up, set for life with the time? Make good use of the time.
Definitely. Wow, that's powerful, man. Over 100 properties analyzed, 26 offers, escrow three times. I mean, the one thing that I take from that is, you know, you knew what you wanted and you didn't give up. You know, it's very easy. I mean, naturally, our natural inclination is to be discouraged, but, you know, you encourage yourself, right? You knew you had a goal in mind. You knew what the end was going to be. And, you know, it was worth it. And I've heard from different people that the NACA process could be, you know, it could take some time. But if you think about it, if you don't have to put much in and it's paying for most of it, it seems like it's worth it. You know, Yeah, I mean, it seems like it's worth it, especially in a market like this. You know, if you can get that kind of assistance and you meet the qualifications and you can take care of everything you need to take care of, you got to get what you want in the end. So I think it's really cool, man. what was the purchase price on that one?
So I purchased it for six. See, I should know this. Because I've been looking at the value. Yeah,
600 like, or so.
Yeah, it's like six. I do know it. It's 640.
Okay.
But I was thinking about the value that it's increased to because it's gone up since I purchased it in 6 months. It's already up like tens of thousands of dollars. That's real
estate. LA, man.
Tens of thousands, man. LA, that's LA. So I bought it at 640. But I got a loan. I got a renovation loan.
Okay.
A rehabilitation loan for like 60,000. That was like included in the in the thing. So in total, the mortgage was like 700,000. Yeah.
Nice. So how did it feel when it was finally done and you were able to move in? How did you feel at the end of the finish line? Because you know you went through quite a lot to get there.
So you know what, man? After I closed, it was habitable, but up to my standards, I wanted to be renovated. So yeah. I'll tell this to some people too.
Yeah.
I think Gabby got hers, and I'm sorry, because she's like my personal
good, man.
Associate.
Good.
I'm like using previous guest names and stuff. No problem. Think some people get their units already like nice. And the flooring was nice in my unit, a couple things were nice, but the kitchen was horrible and the bathroom was way too small. It was like I had to bust through it. It was a closet, I had to tear it down, all that. So for another like 2.5-3 months, I still had to go through the renovations of my unit. So it felt amazing, and I felt like it was like surreal. It felt real surreal. And it's crazy, the same week that I closed, I got into UCLA. I got the call that I got to UCLA, my dream school. So I was just like, I've been drinking less now, but I was like drunk for like a week. I was just celebrating. It was like, it was ridiculous. But it was surreal, man. And I want to say that second escrow that fell through, I have an IG page. It's Living Rent Free at #? Living Rent Free. No G, just Living Rent Free. And it's a picture of me standing in front of this beautiful triplex in Jefferson Park. It's a block from where my father and all my aunts and uncles grew up. My grandmother still lives over there. I have like so many Christmases, Thanksgiving memories, like running over there, swooping over there. And it fell through on my birthday. And I bawled, I cried. It was like, it was devastating, man. It was devastating. So to pick myself back up and finish and complete the deal, it felt like the end of a marathon, man. Rest in peace, Nipsey Hussle. It felt like the end of a marathon.
That's incredible, man. That's incredible. And so how, what was it like finding tenants for that, for your other two units? I know, you know, was it different than your experience the first time? What was it like the second time around?
So this time around is it's a lot different, man, because the roommates was like the roommate style and the laws. There's something called rent stabilization ordinance out here in LA. So most of the properties built like before 1978 or some number, I can't remember exactly what it is, but they have a rent control. And it's a tenant friendly laws. So a lot of them favor like the tenant over the landlord. But I was blessed, man. I was blessed because I had two tenants already occupying the property.
Nice.
And they're on Section 8. So I would say about 75% about 75% of the rent is deposited into my bank account every first of the month. Wow. And early on holidays. Thank you to the U.S. government. Thank you to Los Angeles city government. Yeah, so it's a blessing, man. So this is crazy, something crazy. I went to Germany a few weeks after I closed on the property and I got into UCLA. Bro, I was like in the Alps, June 1st, checking my account or whatever. Boom, it just hit an account. Passive, I don't have to knock on doors. I don't have to text nobody. I have to send a reminder. And I have some good tenants, man. I have an older tenant who's been here for almost as long as I've been alive. And then I have a younger tenant. She's a little ratchet. She gives me some headaches sometimes, but we have a relationship now.
Yeah.
I don't want to call her ratchet. I don't want to say that, but she's a little tough. Yeah, she's a little tough. But I think over time we built an understanding, a relationship. So I didn't have to find tenants, man. I'm happy about that, man.
Wow, that's amazing, man. And you know, something I was thinking about is just the options that ownership gives you. You know, you had that first property up there in the Palmdale, Lancaster area. And, you know, you were able to, you know, utilize that home to buy another one and to, you know, give yourself more options in the future. So I think that's incredible, man. And now you're living rent-free once again.
There you go.
It's crazy. I mean, I just think it's very inspiring because for people in larger markets like New York, like LA, it's very easy for us to think that it's not possible. And I mean, I don't blame anybody who has that thought just because a lot of these prices can seem intimidating. But in fact, you know, there are programs like FHA, you know, you have NACA with, you know, zero down and all those, and a whole bunch of stuff.
And VAs as well.
Yeah, VAs as well.
For the veterans.
You know, I think it's just crucial for us to share that, no, it actually is possible. Here are some things you could do. Here are some programs out there that you might be eligible for. So I think it's awesome, man. And I'm sure it comes in handy living rent-free being a student.
Big time, man. It's expensive, man. But I'll say something else about the options, man. There's a guy, Tim Ferriss. He wrote 4-Hour Work Week. Mm-hmm. Gary Vee, all these guys talk about that's the thing with these concepts all on IG and social media. It's tough because it's like the cliches. They're so valuable, the information they put out, but because it's put out so much, it's undervalued. Like people take it for granted. But I heard Tim Ferriss say one time that something you could do if you had like an apartment, you could like rent it out on Airbnb and like go and travel and see the world. Or work from different, you know, if you had a business that was like an e-business, you could work from different parts of the world and rent out your spot. But that was something that intrigued me because I had a friend who also bought a triplex and he would go to Mexico for like 3 months and he would work remotely and he would just work in Mexico. Shout out to Oliver. He's dope. Yeah, he just got his law degree from Harvard. Nice. But he always inspired me. I always had the thought in the back of my head. And I had another friend, her name was Joy, who was able to quit her job. She was able to start her business because she was living rent free in a triplex in New Jersey, just outside of New York. And she went through NACA as well.
Right.
And for me, I'm able to travel, and when I leave, I can rent out my unit, and it'll pay for the trip. So you want to hit Catalina, you know what I mean? You want to hit Colorado, you put it on there, Airbnb, you put it on there on the different vacation rentals, and you travel. And then as well, if something I'm doing now is I'm going to be working part time as a dietitian, part time school, and I'm still going to be able to save a significant amount of money because living rent free.
Yeah.
And I'm going to start actually doing kind of what you're doing. But I'm using my platform, the IG, Living Rent Free, to teach other people how to live rent free, regardless of where you are in the country. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna start putting out more videos about it, more posts, because that's the lifestyle that's been afforded to me with ownership, with house hacking, with living rent free. So it gives you a lot of options, man.
That's amazing. So you got Airbnb. That's amazing, man. And you know, living rent free has allowed you to design your life in the way you want it to be, you know, because like you said, way in the beginning of the interview, way back, you realize your biggest expense, as is with pretty much everybody, is your housing costs. And the fact that you were able to eliminate that, you know, I'm sure it lifts the burden off of you. It gives you options. Like you can kind of pick and choose what you want to do, where you want to be. You know, you're going to school, you're working part time. And, you know, even back when you were in the other house, you know, you were able to leave the job. You didn't gel with the boss, and you kind of picked up some things to keep you busy on the side. But can you imagine what your decision may have been if you had to pay rent? You probably would have stayed in that job. So many decisions would have been different if you did not have the opportunity to live rent free. So I think that's very powerful, man. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're a deep thinker, man. I appreciate it, man. I like that. Because it's something that I realized now. I mean, I am working full time now and full time in the part time school, but that's a goal of mine, is moving to the part time, and just look at my expenses and see, okay, how much am I still gonna be able to cash flow and profit and put to the side, and just really work on spreading this message that, like, hey, like, and also I think I love the Black real estate dialogue. Like, more of us need to be living rent free. More of us, and it's not just the rent free. Like, something I want to say is, like, with tax returns, when it's time for tax returns, like my first property, I would get like 7 G's because of depreciation, and you get to write off the insurance, you get to write off the interest, you get to write off any repairs that you did. I've only been here for 6 months, but my tax return this year is gonna be like 10 racks. So it's going to be more once I'm here for a whole year, but there's so many benefits to it, and we need more wealth. We need to close that wealth gap. Mm-hmm. And another thing I want to say is, like, we have to grow it. So, like, it's not enough to just get the house hack, the first house. If you have equity, that's like monopoly money until you make use of it, until you pull out the HELOC and invest it, until you sell that house and go buy a rental, or sell that house and upgrade and do a 1031 exchange or move into another one, it's meaningless. That's how Lauren, that's how my homegirl that owns the multiple properties did it. As her multi-units went up in value, I think she bought one for like 600. It went up to 750,000. So it went up 150,000. She was able to refinance it, purchase another 4 unit, and just keep the ball rolling.
Right.
So we need more wealth, more success. And then we can share with other people. The reason that I'm really into real estate heavily is because of Jay Morrison, who is huge now, but back then he was large, but he wasn't as big as he is now.
Yeah.
And seeing that image and him coming with the swag and the culture of a Black man, I related to it, and it made me want to get wealth. And I'll say, when I first sold it, I had that check. All that money, man, you walk different. You know what I mean? My chest is usually out, but your chest is out. You know what I mean? You're moving different because it's not just the money. It's money from your own ideas.
Right,
it's money from your own effort. It's worth so much more than the money you got from another man or from another organization. It's money that you've earned, you devised, and you designed. So we need more wealth, man.
Definitely.
We need more wealth in the family.
For sure, for sure. Just off topic question. Tell us more about your career as a dietitian. How'd you get into that?
It's weird. I've always had like two passions, and my sister, older sister, who knows me the most because she's known me all my life. I'm the second oldest of five. My younger siblings, they came a little bit later, so they know me all their life, but she's known me all my life. She knows that business has always been my first passion, man. Business was always my first passion. That's why I'm at UCLA studying business. But one of my second loves was nutrition and like eating healthy. My mother got cancer when I was a youth, I think 12 or 13. And she passed away like 5 years later, like at 17, when I was 17. So in that process, I learned about like Dr. Sebi. And this was because Dr. Sebi's office was on La Cienega Road. There's La Cienega Boulevard, which is the main one, but there's like an off street La Cienega. It's still there now. But like back then, it was like I said, it was VHSs. I used to watch his talks on VHS. It wasn't on YouTube back then. And so I learned about like nutrition, eating healthy. Being in LA, being in California, so all the vegan restaurants, the yoga spots. My mom would take me to all these vegan spots. So it made me realize I want to teach more people about eating healthy, about changing their lifestyle so that they can prevent obesity, heart disease, diabetes, hypertension. And so that became my passion. So I studied at Howard. I reached that goal. I've been working in nutrition for about almost like a decade. I know I look young, but it's been a while. And so I am young, but it's like about 7-8 years now. Yeah. So now I'm transitioning to the real estate thing, man. But I'm still passionate about it, man. I'm doing it full time. Like I said, I'm pursuing like part time opportunities, but it's still gonna be in nutrition. And then I'm gonna spend my other time creating this platform at real estate education about how to live rent free and share it. But nutrition is dope. And I wanna say another thing too.
Yeah,
that's really important. Like sometimes people sacrifice their health in chasing money. It's not advisable. It's not advisable. You want to live long as possible to enjoy and foster this wealth and pass it down to your family, to charities, do philanthropy. So you gotta maintain the health, man. Gotta maintain the health. It's important.
Definitely. Yeah. That's powerful, man. And, you know, I think it's, especially powerful and inspiring that you as a Black man are in the nutrition space and, you know, you can share that like the health side and you can also share the real estate side. That's incredible, man. And, what are you looking to pursue with your MBA? Is your concentration in real estate?
It's going to be in real estate, man. But, to be honest with you, as I take more classes and I learn more and I meet different people in different fields, it just keeps opening up. So yeah. I'll say this. There's two things I'm focused on in real estate, or like I should say at UCLA with the MBA, is community development or social business, like philanthropy. That's like net impact, giving back, empowering the community, right? And then the other side is using the engine of real estate, using the engine of capitalism to generate money to give back in the community, do community development, right. Do social business, give back. Because a lot of times we're donor dependent or grant dependent, and the donors don't always have our best interests in mind. They don't always look like us. Those that don't look like us, they advocate for us. They only have limited funds. So I want to do real estate development, definitely. But something that's intriguing, man, is real estate finance. Because finance makes everything move. And there's actually a lot more money, I think, in real estate finance than in real estate development. And another thing with development is that it's slow. It takes like months and sometimes years to develop large scale projects.
Right.
And it's kind of boring if you're just like killing it in real estate and you're like, okay, well, what am I doing next? Like, I'm managing a project, but it's like going in slow motion. So I'm thinking about doing real estate finance to keep me like busy while the development side is going slowly. Right, Those are the two things I want to do, man. But I haven't actually started taking real estate classes yet at UCLA.
Okay.
It's just the foundational classes, like business courses. So this quarter I'm taking financial accounting, economics. Then you do like entrepreneurship, business plan, and then business plan design, all that. And then eventually you get up to like the real estate course or your specialization courses.
Definitely, for sure, for sure. And are there any additional books that you recommend that have helped you to gain your knowledge? And you could also repeat the book you mentioned before, so people don't miss that.
Now we're talking.
Because that
talking.
Was.
So I want to ask you: is there like a top three or top?
Oh no,
like number we.
No, however many you want to shout out.
No, okay. So, one book I want to say, man. I have so many, man. I love reading books. That's another thing that helped me along the way.
Yeah.
I love reading books. I'm not gonna show you guys my library, but if it's like audio books, it's good. I just want to say that if you can't read it, get it in audio. If you can't get it in audio, because some of these books are gonna be old, I'm gonna talk about. Buy them and read a paragraph at a time, read a page at a time, but get through the book. One thing I want to say too before I go into the books is I met Rick Ross, the original. Rick Ross.
Oh, Freeway Ricky Ross.
Yeah, Freeway Ricky Ross, right? So he's from LA as well, sold drugs. My father happened to sell drugs too, but that's a whole nother story. We don't have to get into that. But I met him because he's like, he's vegan now and he goes to a lot of healthy restaurants, right? But he didn't learn how to read until he got to prison. This is after he's a grown man, after he's big time, biggest drug dealer on the West Coast. Like, he was illiterate. So when he got to prison, he learned how to read. Something crazy he said was that blew my mind was that book is like a cheat code, because it's the wisdom that a man could gain wisdom for 25 years, 2.5 decades. And you could learn that wisdom in a 20 minute to an hour span by reading a book. It's a cheat code. So some of the books I want to mention are this one first. Nothing Down for the 2000s by Robert Allen. I think he updated he has like an updated version of it. So maybe it's like 2010s or whatever, but a lot of good information. Let's see. It's some highlighted parts, but it says negotiate for low down or nothing down deals. Mm-hmm. So that's where I first learned that, hey, I don't have to pay $12,000 down payment. I can ask the seller for $6,000 because he's motivated to sell.
Yeah.
And my agent said, there's no way he's going to do that. No way he's going to accept it. I said, you work for me, please just put it out there.
Right.
The person signed off for it. I was $6,000 just for asking for it. So this is a really good book. I recommend that. You'll learn how to negotiate. Oh, and I had to negotiate, like on this deal, I think I got $20,000 from the seller negotiating.
Wow.
Yeah. So negotiation is cold. My agent this time was like, man, you're such a great negotiator. Like, how did you learn this, this and that? But it's in the books, man. It's all out here in the books. So just read the book. That book goes over negotiation. Another one is this book is more so like the mindset. I like to read a lot of like mindset, motivation, self-help, action books. The reason is because most of the time, like the knowledge is not enough. You have to have the drive, the motivation, the inspiration to go out and get it. The self-belief, the self-faith, and the confidence when you get knocked down to get back up and go and get it. So I always read self-help books. This book is called I Will by Ben Sweetland. Sweetland is sweet, like Sweetland. If I had to recommend one book that would change it all, mindset book, that will turn everything around, it would be the I Will, Ben Sweetland. That's Overthinking, Grow Rich. That's over... All these other books I've ever read. I Will by Ben Sweetman. That book has like changed my life. Another book by a brother from Bigger Pockets who I really admire. His name is Scott Trench. Young white dude. He's about my age. He really advocates for like investing in stocks, house hacking, being really fit and like healthy. He's like, you should be working out 5 days, 6 days a week. Like, you should be eating healthy. Like, stop eating trash, whatever. But he has a book called Set for Life. And that's one of my top 10 probably real estate books of all time. He basically walks you through being broke and in debt to being financially free through real estate and like investing and goal setting. And he teaches you how to house hack. So he uses like house hack, refinance, get the second house hack, refinance, get the next house hack, buy rentals. Go from there. It's like an amazing book. I would say get that. And it's on audiobook.
Nice.
This book is probably, if I had to recommend one book for personal finance and real estate for Black people, I have a YouTube video that's like 38 minutes, 40 minutes on this book. It's called Black Folks Guide to Making Big Money in America by George Shapiro. It was the Rich Dad, Poor Dad for Black folk before Rich Dad, Poor Dad even came out.
Wow.
It was the personal finance and budgeting book, How to Get Your Credit Right, the Jay Morrison, before he was even born. Well, I don't know if it was before he was born. It was in the 70s, late 70s, so maybe he was born. But it was like all these books way before that. It's a little outdated because it doesn't talk about the internet because the internet didn't exist. But he talks about how to get your money right, how to get your credit right, how to start a business, how to budget, what wealth means, what's an asset versus a liability. And he plans to see the buying a triplex or fourplex and using the equity to start a business. Right. You look on the internet, that's a simple way to wealth. Like we talked about how to get to become millionaire status and all that. Just simply put, I know we're talking about the books, but just let me add this. Say a young sister or brother buys a fourplex, it goes up $100,000, $250,000 over time. That money could be taken and starting, and you can use that to start a franchise. And they can't discriminate against you because you're Black. They can't have an old boys club because you're a woman. Because you have hard value, equity in your house worth $100,000, $250,000, you can borrow against it and start a business or buy a larger apartment building, right? So he talks about that. The next book, I would say, Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice by Dennis Kimbrough. Think and Grow Rich, everybody talks about it on your podcast and on all podcasts because it's like the best, it's the most, one of the most best sellers of all time in terms of self-help. But I like the Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice version because some people don't know, but Napoleon Hill was going to write a book for Black people specifically. With Think and Grow Rich, and he had a manuscript, but he died before he could finish it. Wow. And so Dennis Kimbrough, they came to him. Napoleon Hill Society came to him. W. Clement Stone came to him and asked Dennis Kimbrough to write it and finish it. And so just from our perspective, people from all over the world talks about some. So I think you're Haitian, right? Are you Haitian brothers?
Yes.
Yeah, it talks about some Haitian brothers that were dominating in real estate. People who there was a brother who started Chicago was Haitian. And so they just go through history and go through like. Wealthy Black people and their mindset, right? So I would say get that. And speaking of W. Clement, go ahead. So you gotta pick up.
No, sorry, I gotta pick that up, man. That book.
No, that one, bro. So basically, when that triplex fell through on my birthday and I was crying, I like crawled to Think and Grow Rich, and there's a chapter in it called Persistence, and there's a chapter in it called Faith.
Yeah.
And I was I'm telling you, I was sobbing, bro, because the deal fell through. And I was reading the book with tears dropping on the pages, but it talks about persistence and faith. And the next day I woke up and I had an epiphany saying, go to this neighborhood, look in this neighborhood and start looking for houses, get out the bed. Cause I couldn't get out the bed. I was depressed. I was like, oh, damn, this deal went through. I fell through, I went through. And that book helped me with the mindset, helped me push through. So I would say read it. Success Through a Positive Mental Attitude by W. Clement Stone. This man lived to be 101 years old. He, at one time in the 70s, was Forbes' richest man in the world. He wrote a book called Success Through a Positive Mental Attitude. I read it back in, I think, 2017. Man, that book changed my life. It supercharged me to get, like, a really nice physique. Yeah, it had me running and working out again. Had me just on the train to success, man. That book is, like, a top. That's also in my top 10 self-help books. It'll have you charged up, man. And then I think I have one more book, brother. This one is Millionaire Real Estate Investor by Gary Keller. A lot of people talk about it, and it's kind of like a, I don't know, like not cliche, but it's just so good I can't not mention it because it tells so many stories. First, he starts off with mindset. That's why I'm always talking about mindset and stuff. His first few chapters are purely on mindset. So, you know, it's important, the mindset, but he breaks it down, goes through mindset. And then he tells you all these different stories about, well, that's at the end, all these different stories of successful real estate investors. But he breaks down how to become financially free in real estate in a very practical, very straightforward, simple way. I think the average person should start off house hacking, in my opinion, because it's the easiest, because you can use a residential loan, which is easier to qualify for. To get into a multi-unit. And then from there, you can use the conventional investor loans to get those rental properties. You own one. You said you own a rental property. It's a little more stringent. It's a little more difficult when you're an investor to get a loan. So, but he does break it. He breaks it all down, man. So I would say get that book, man. That book is amazing.
Cool, man. And how can people reach you? How can they find out more about what you're doing and be in touch with you if they have any questions and want to connect further?
I would say go to the IG page. I said Living Rent Free. It's living without the G, so LIVIN Rent Free. So hashtag, or what is it? I'm sorry, I'm not that good with social media. There you go.
No, you're good.
At Living Rent Free.
Yeah.
I would say just go there, man, and from there, we could talk. We could talk on the phone. I could give my email. We could just hit the DMs. You can follow me. I could tell you the YouTube videos, all that from there. But that's the focus right there.
Cool, man. Wow, this has been great. I mean, I'm inspired. I'm sure our listeners will be inspired. For our listeners, you know, it's possible to, you know, purchase a home in a big market. It's possible to live rent-free or at least close to it in a big market. It just takes some creativity, you know, looking for the information that's out there and getting it done. So, Mark, I appreciate you coming on, brother.
Thank you for the invite, man. Appreciate you.
Absolutely. And for our listeners, you can find us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue. You can also purchase merchandise at gum.co/BRED. Also, you can follow us on Twitter at Bread Podcast, BRED Podcast. Thank you all and look forward to connecting with you all soon.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.